How's it going, guys? And welcome back to another episode of Locked On Clippers, the official Los Angeles Clippers podcast, the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Garrett Corpenning. In addition to this show, I cover the Clippers for Clipperholics, which is FanSided's one and only Clippers blog. You can find me on Twitter at GA Corpenning. There you can feel free to send me questions, comments, and anything else you feel relates to LA Clippers basketball. Once again, that's GA Corpenning, GACHORPENNING. So welcome back to the show, guys. I'm happy to be here talking to you today. I have some great topics lined up for you and happy to finish the week off with a good show. So to start things off today, I'll be looking back at Lou Williams' career year with the LA Clippers and discussing whether or not I think he'll become the best long-term piece in the Chris Paul trade. After that, I'll get into my Friday segment, Weekly News Roundup. In that segment, I'll discuss the biggest headlines from the week in relation to the LA Clippers. And to close, we'll take a look at some of the most recent NBA mock drafts and compare the players they had the Clippers selecting. So as you know, Lou Williams averaged a career-high 22.6 points per game this season, got serious All-Star consideration, was the team's MVP, and is a lock for the NBA's Sixth Man of the Year award. How'd he do it? And why now? Simple. Lou Williams was the best player for the LA Clippers. After Blake Griffin was traded, and even while he was down with injuries, the team was placed in the hands of Lou Will. Still, though, Williams' 29.8% usage rate wasn't the highest mark for his career. He also wasn't taking more shots than ever. His 25 per game is only his second highest for his career. He did, however, play more minutes than ever before, nearly 600 more than his previous high of 2,000, and thus, he scored more than ever as well. 1,782 points, to be exact. Williams was excellent at creating space for himself this season, especially when higher-profile guys like Blake Griffin and Danilo Gallinari were on the floor. By using their gravitation to his advantage, Williams was able to create a lot of open looks for himself, completely off the ball. And this is one case in which the numbers actually back up the eye test as well. More than 65% of Williams' three-point makes were assisted on this season, meaning someone fed him the ball prior to his shot going up. Still, though, Lou was a great creator with the ball in his hands. He benefited from having his makes assisted, like I said, but that doesn't mean he couldn't get his own shot when he needed to. Williams showed tremendous driving ability, converting roughly 60% of his takes at the rim. For comparison, DeAndre Jordan, who's one of the league's most efficient scorers in the paint, converted 70% of his looks at the rim this season, and fellow teammate and shooting guard Austin Rivers converted 56% of his. So you can tell there that someone, you know, with Lou's size, he's 6'1", 135 pounds, being able to convert at that rate in the paint is incredible, especially when you have big guys like Rudy Gobert and Steven Adams who are controlling that area of the paint. So for someone like Lou with that kind of speed and that kind of size to cut and slash the way he does and score inside is really incredible to watch, first of all, and it's also a tremendous feat for someone of that stature. And as games went on, it didn't get any easier for opponents to stop Williams. In fact, it got more difficult. Williams was among the league's top fourth quarter scorers this past season, and he converted more total attempts in those 12 minutes than he did any other. He made 200 total shots in the fourth quarter of games last season, including 73s. To compare that, he made 70 total threes in the first two quarters combined over the course of the year, 33 in the first and 37 in the second. So to sum that up in simpler terms, Lou made more threes, 70, in the fourth quarter of games last season. The same amount of threes in the fourth quarter of games last season as he did in the first two quarters of games last season. 70 each there. Williams also shot his highest field goal percentage in the fourth at nearly 40%. The next highest was 38.4% in the first quarter, followed by 38% in the third and almost 29% in the second quarter. Now, whether or not Williams will turn out to be the best piece returned in the Chris Paul trade is another story, so let's dive into that as well. There are really only three players that should be in the conversation as to who was the best player for the Clippers received in the trade. That's Patrick Beverley, Montrezl Harrell, and Lou Williams. In addition to those guys, the Clippers received a number of other guys that they either cut or waived immediately. Some of those guys played on the team's summer league team. But the main guys who stayed and contributed include Beverley, Montrezl Harrell, and Lou Williams, as well as Sam Decker. In addition to Decker, the team also received Houston Rockets' first-round pick in this year's draft. However, that was moved to Atlanta, when the team shipped out Jamal Crawford and part of that three-team deal that sent Gallinari to the Clippers. So we didn't see enough of Bev this year to really evaluate his play, but what we did see was excellent. He gets inside opponents' heads better than anyone else in the league and is quite possibly the most intimidating 6-foot tall man on the face of the earth. A prime example of him being so tenaciously minded and getting inside people's heads like that was the first game of the season. The Clippers took on the Lakers in the first game of the year back in October, and Patrick Beverley was the underdog, so to say, in that matchup against Lonzo Ball, who was supposed to be, or is supposed to be, one of the league's next premier point guards. And instead of having a tremendous debut like they expected him to, Beverley spoiled Ball's debut, holding him to a few points, didn't make a lot of his shots, and Beverley the whole game was energized, was tenacious, and really kept Ball from doing anything spectacular, which was, you know, his goal. So Bev was a steal in the draft and that trade, no doubt, but because his contribution was so limited due to injury this season, I can't say that he was the best piece acquired. Beverley, as you know, got hurt in November, went down with a knee injury, came back after sitting out for a few games against the New York Knicks, played that game all the way through, and from then on he was out for the rest of the year, had to get surgery on his knee to repair a little issue. So we are going to see more of Bev next season. A lot of guys thought he was going to come back at the end of this season if the team made a playoff push, and I can't confirm or deny that, but given that Beverley was shooting around on the court in some of the team's final games of the year, it certainly did seem like he was ready to come back and perhaps make an impact on the court and get the Clippers into the playoffs if he was needed to. And then comes Montrezl Harrell, which will make this a lot more interesting. I'll be talking more about Trez on Monday's show, so I'll keep this brief. He may have the brightest future of any current Clipper on the roster. That includes the rookies we drafted in the draft last year, Thornwell and Juwan Evans. That includes Sam Decker. That includes a lot of the other younger guys in the team that really have bright futures in the NBA, but I think what we saw from Harrell this season really shows us what kind of player he can be. He was unreal, absolutely unreal. And if he can continue to grow and add to what he's already accomplished, Harrell could easily become one of the league's premier bigs in a matter of years. His game still needs some polishing. We certainly saw that his mid-range shot could use some work. If he could add some more range to his offensive abilities there, he would be a lot more versatile on that end of the floor. He's a great defender, blocked a lot of shots this year. He's very, very quick for his size as well. There were a lot of possessions that I saw this year when Harrell would go coast to coast, dribble all the way down, you know, and score inside. And he really has great touch inside, soft touch inside. Made it look really easy to carve through opposing defenses into paint and get a layup and score with ease. So what we saw from Harrell on the offensive end of the floor was great. I'd like to see a little more moving forward. But for now, Harrell is a tremendous piece that really caught on at the end of the year. And I hope he continues that moving forward. Which brings us to Lou Williams. And first, let me say one thing. If Williams hadn't signed that 3-year extension in March with the Clippers, the long-term, his contributions in the trade wouldn't have made a real lasting impression. Sure, he had a great season with the team. He's going to win Sixth Man of the Year, no doubt. He was a potential all-star. But there was a lot of talks about him being traded as well. And when Lou Williams was first brought into the team, I was certain it was going to be a trade asset to try and get a solid starter for the team or something like that. Not a lot of people I talked to, at least, thought that Williams would stick around for a while. But once he started playing and the team saw what he was capable of, Clippers saw what he was capable of, I guess they decided, you know, hey, we know he's worth a lot in the trade market, so you show us a player we think is worth it, and if you can't, we're going to hang on to Williams. And the two sides there got along really well and negotiated this 3-year contract, $7 million a year. Then yes, absolutely. His contributions, like I said, last season mean a lot, but it's going to mean a lot more moving forward since we have him for a few more seasons now. And if Williams keeps up his stellar play off the bench, he will be, without a doubt, the most important asset acquired from the Chris Paul trade. I'd love to talk more about the long-term results of the trade, and I will in the future. So feel free to send me an email or hit me up on Twitter so I can hear your thoughts about it. I'd like to know what you think about that trade, who you think was the best value, who you think is the best player moving forward, who you think maybe we could have done more with before we cut them or waived them, whatever we did. So I'd love to hear your thoughts about that. But I've got to move on now. I have enough time for my next segment, Weekly News Roundup. Today I'll be reviewing some of the biggest headlines in the week, including an update on Kawhi Leonard. If your company is interested in advertising to men between the ages of 18 and 44, your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Clippers is listened to by 98% men and 80% of those men between the ages of 18 and 44. If that speaks to you, that's a fan base you'd like to advertise to, just shoot me a message at gcorpenning@outlook.com. That's GCHORPENNING at outlook.com to get things started. I would love to do business with you, and our rates are very reasonable. Coming up, I'll be comparing some of the most recent NBA mock drafts and seeing which players they have the Clippers selecting. But right now, it's time for Weekly News Roundup. I talked an awful lot about Kawhi Leonard on Wednesday's show, but as you might know, another piece of news surfaced recently that I feel is really worth talking about. Sam Amico of Amico Hoops reported that the Spurs are looking to trade Kawhi Leonard in a shocking piece that I really was expecting to see. Everything we've heard from the Spurs organization so far has told us that they are not looking to trade Kawhi Leonard. There's been not official documents, but a lot of really close sources saying that the Spurs will not want to trade him. They're either going to negotiate something with him and try and figure something out, maybe let him go into free agency or something along those lines next season. But the signal we've been getting from the Spurs has not been anything about a trade. So immediately I was shocked by this piece. I questioned the legitimacy of it, and I still do, because the sources, I'm not sure the reliability of the things they're saying, and they certainly seem very un-Spurs-like. For example, Amico states that per Peter Vesci, his source, Leonard was not wanted to attend practices, and quotes Greg Popovich as saying, "Keep him away from us." It seems really un-Spurs-like, like I said, and on Pop-like to say and do such things, since San Antonio was one of the league's most respected organizations, and Popovich is a 3-time Coach of the Year award winner. Obviously, Popovich is one of the league's most respected coaches, certainly has a lot of titles and victories under his belt. Not something you'd expect to hear from a guy that has drawn so much respect from players and analysts and coaches alike, to have those sorts of comments be made. So that alone makes me wonder if this article is authentic, comes from a reliable writer, and those sorts of things. The sources I'm not sure about. However, Clippers fans may not want to get their hopes up, though, in addition to that reliability of the article, because as stated in the earlier episode, Popovich refuses to trade Leonard to a Western Conference team. And that was also mentioned in the article as well. Pop talked earlier about trading. How about the Memphis Grizzlies trading Pau Gasol to the Lakers a few years back, about a decade ago, actually, and how he thought it was a bonehead move. He doesn't understand why he'd trade a star player, a really good asset, to a competing team in your conference. And I do understand that, and I think it makes a lot of sense. And I'm with Pop on that that stance there. But as a Clippers fan, I think it'd be great to have Leonard on the team. And so I get Pop's stance moving forward there. I've read the Celtics would be a good target for Leonard to land. However, I think it would make the most sense that if a team presents the best trade package, then that would be the trade the team accepts. But Pop wants to do some things there, so you never know what the Spurs might accept. And besides the Kawhi news, it was kind of a slow week in Clipperland. Wesley Johnson, backup wing and forward there for the team, reportedly exercised his $6.1 million player option, meaning he will return for one more season until his contract expires. Like I said, Wesley was due $6.1 million on that option there. Had he declined it, the Clippers would have had 8 players signed through next season, and Johnson would have entered the free agent market. And I really think it was a smart move on Johnson's end because, the amount of money he can get moving forward in today's NBA, isn't really a guarantee. Johnson might not be needed on most rosters and those sorts of things, but I think personally, for the money he's making, fans should have a positive outlook about his opting in. Johnson, despite a few gaffes and poor performances, talking specifically about James Harden breaking his ankles earlier this season. Johnson is a solid rotational player, and when he was needed this season, he stepped up big time. Had 40 starts because of injuries at that position and those sorts of things. And his numbers weren't great, but for the money, Johnson does a lot on both ends of the floor. He was one of the team's top performers in the steals category and the blocks category. So, you know, what Johnson does for the money, he's a good contributor. He has great length, great size, and his attitude is something that I've always loved about Johnson as well. Even when his ankles got broken by Harden there, you saw him immediately get up and smile, look to the bench, laugh a little bit, have some fun with it. Never seen a frown on Wesley Johnson's face, and that has to be good for the locker room atmosphere and those sorts of things. So Johnson, a guy I like, isn't going to put up the biggest numbers or impress you with his performance and those sorts of things, but he's a good guy to have on the team, a good teammate, and for the money he's being given, certainly not a bad investment there. So now that that's out of the way, it's time we dive into some mock drafts and find out which prospects the Clippers could be drafting come June. NBADraft.net has the LA Clippers selecting Shai Gilgeous-Alexander with a 12th overall pick, a freshman point guard from the University of Kentucky. In addition to that pick, they have Clippers taking Miles Bridges with a 13th overall pick. Shai is a 6'6", 180-pound guard with a 7-foot wingspan, tremendous size for a point guard, like ridiculous wingspan there, ridiculous height. And while he is, you know, on the slimmer side, 180-pound frame there, Alexander is a versatile guard with good defensive ability. He doesn't take a lot of threes despite a high conversion rate. He took, I want to say, 60 threes in his freshman year at Kentucky there and converted 40% of them. So he has shown ability to knock down those threes, but takes them at a really low rate. So moving forward with that there, it would be interesting to see if maybe his making those shots was more of a situational thing, or if, you know, that's just part of his game that hadn't been discovered yet. He doesn't take a lot of threes, like I said, despite his conversion rate, but he's a fantastic guard around the rim and has great court vision. In his lone season with the Wildcats, he averaged 14.4 points per game, as well as 5.1 assists and a little over 4 rebounds a game. Miles Bridges is a 6'7", 230-pound combo forward and is one of the draft's best athletes. He's also a great finisher. Bridges is bound to be one of the league's premier dunkers. He's extremely explosive and has developed a solid outside shot as well. In two seasons at Michigan State, Bridges averaged 17 points and 7 rebounds per game. Moving on, Bleacher Report has Clippers selecting Zaire Smith with a 12th pick and Colin Sexton with a 13th. Smith is a 6'5", 190-pound shooting guard from Texas Tech, who is coveted for his athleticism and shooting guard ability. Smith connected on 45% of his three-point attempts in his lone season at Tech, and like Alexander, that was a low attempt rate there, but given his percentage there, certainly looks promising for Smith's three-point shot moving forward. He's drawn comparisons to J.R. Smith as well as Zach LaVine. And LaVine, I think, is the comparison that makes the most sense there, given Smith has a 45-inch vertical, making him a real freak athlete. You know, we all saw what LaVine did in the dunk contest a few years back in that face-off with Aaron Gordon. LaVine now is in Chicago with the Bulls. He suffered an ACL injury with the Timberwolves last season and made his debut for the Bulls earlier this year. And he's looking to be one of the Bulls' best players, which isn't saying much right now, but LaVine has a promising future, I think, and given his athleticism and his shooting ability, you know, Smith is a guy that projects to be as good, maybe even better as him in the future. I talked a lot about Sexton earlier this week, and he's one of my favorite prospects in the draft. However, the 13th pick seems like a stretch for him. I don't see how it's likely that he falls beyond the top 10 in the draft. Bleacher Report is the only mock draft I've actually seen that comes from a legitimate source that has Sexton above the top 10. NBADraft.net has him going 7th or 8th, I believe, and most other ones have him going in that 8th to 10 range to the Knicks, the Sixers, or another team there. So I think it'd be great if Sexton fell that far. I don't see it happening, but if he does, you have a lot to look forward to. Sexton is a really explosive point guard, averaging 19 points per game and 3 rebounds, 3 assists at Alabama in his freshman year, including a 40-point performance against the Minnesota Golden Gophers And what stands out especially about that game is that Sexton scored almost half of those points in the last 6 minutes of the game when he was actually playing in a 3-on-5 against Minnesota. Due to a fight earlier in the game and a few players fouling out, Alabama finished the game with three players on the floor as opposed to Minnesota's five. Alabama simply didn't have any more players eligible to play in that game. Sexton took over, nearly won the game on the road against a tough Minnesota team. Fell short late, but still the performance is what sticks in our heads when you think about Sexton and his explosive ability. Lastly, sporting news is the Clippers selecting Gilgeous Alexander again at 12 and fellow Wildcat Kevin Knox at 13. Knox is a 6'9", 215-pound combo forward, much like Miles Bridges, just a little bit taller. He projects as another Tobias Harris type of player. He has great size and length with a great outside shot. And I say great, but I mean it's going to be great. It's got some time to develop. Knox only converted 34% of his threes in his freshman season at Kentucky. However, I think he would be a good fit for the team, especially if he can become a Tobias Harris type of player there. Certainly has potential to become that. And like Sexton, this might be a bit of a reach at number 13. I've seen Knox go in most mock drafts in that 8 to 12 range, or 8 to 11 range even. So getting him at that position would be great for the team. As with Sexton, as with Gilgeous Alexander, all these guys are great prospects and would all be really, really great fits, I think, for the LA Clippers moving forward. So guys, that'll do it for today's show. Thanks for stopping by, and thanks for making my first week as host of Locked On Clippers so enjoyable. On Monday, I'll pick up with the weekend's biggest stories, discuss Montrezl Harrell's rise to fame, and I'll tell you why the best is yet to come for the LA Clippers. Thank you so much for listening today, Clipper Nation. Once again, I'm Garrett Korpenning, and I hope you enjoyed today's show. You can find more from the Locked On Podcast Network on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and other online podcast platforms. I will catch you guys on Monday.